We're building the best internet talk radio on the planet.
I'm sorry, this is effective when?
It's effective now.
TalkZone.com.
Now, the Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com. Internet talk radio. Here's your host, Dave Baum.
Welcome. Great to have you aboard again for the Dave Baum Show on TalkZone.com. Hope you're ready for a fantastic show. Two topics, very different. We'll be talking about drug advertising on TV. Underwhelming, overwhelming, just right. At least two points of view. And, of course, yours is always welcome. Second hour of the show, we'll taste wine. Reds and whites. Now, even though you're not in the studio tasting the wines with us, you can still appreciate it and maybe pick up a tip or two along the way to buying your next bottle of wine. That's part of the Baum Show today. And these are the administrative functions for you to know about. TalkZone.com, tell your friends about it. The fastest growing form of radio on the planet. Compelling Internet Talk Radio. Our phone number is 1-888-463-6748. That's 1-888-463-6748. That's a toll-free line. If you're calling from overseas, because we reach out to more than 115 countries, our phone number from overseas is 011-847-470-0937. That's 847-470-0937 if you're calling from overseas. As we said, your phone calls, your listenership, and let's get on with the show today. Happy to have you aboard. And by the way, thanks for telling your friends about the Dave Baum Show and especially TalkZone.com. Selling sickness on TV is a multi-billion dollar business. As a matter of fact, in 2007, according to Nielsen Monitor Plus, drug makers spent more than $5 billion on direct-to-consumer ads. More than half of that was spent on TV. Recent very high-profile campaigns involving cholesterol drug Vytorin, cholesterol drug Lipitor, and anemia-treating Procrit had some members of Congress wondering whether the Food and Drug Administration, better known to you and me as the FDA, needs legislation to tighten controls on drug marketing, including the right to force changes in TV drug ads before they're broadcast. The barrage of ads is endless.
So my doctor prescribed Advair. Advair treats both main causes to help prevent symptoms in the first place.
Ask your doctor about New Bayer with Heart Advantage, the only low-dose aspirin product that not only lowers the risk of heart attack, but also has phytosterols proven to lower cholesterol.
Every day, people with type 2 diabetes are doing more to find a healthy balance with diet, exercise, and the once-daily pill, Januvia.
If you have trouble sleeping, Lunesta can give you a great night. 7 to 8 restful hours of sleep.
You know that song, Time in a Bottle? Well, I got time in a bottle. Just by changing my allergy medicine from Claritin to Zyrtec.
I have high blood pressure, and I have high cholesterol.
But he treats both with one pill.
Catawet makes it easier to manage my two conditions.
Editor's note, those are excerpts from one television network newscast. Just one television network newscast. We're going to look at it from a number of different points of view. Our first point of view is Jim Davidson, who's the director of the Advertising Coalition, which lobbies for media and drug companies in Washington. And, Jim, welcome to the Dave Baum Show. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Jim, why do you think there's a growing number of regular folks and politicians who want to rein in, not eliminate, TV drug ads?
Well, I'm not sure that I would agree with you that it's a growing number. There have been some members who have taken that position for a long time. But we're not... The issue here, and you mentioned the possibility of having FDA pre-approve this advertising. One of the things that protects you on the air, protects your readers and their right to read what they want in this country, and as well as they want to publish something, is the First Amendment. And the First Amendment is very, very specific and clear on the issue of prior restraint. In our country, if what you say is truthful and not misleading, it is protected by the First Amendment, and the government cannot step in and pre-edit it. it has to be responsible, but it has to be truthful. It has to be about a lawful activity. But in this case, the First Amendment does protect it. But beyond that, we've got a tremendous source of information. Yes, it's funded in advertising, but let me just give you one statistic. There are 65 million Americans in this country who suffer from what's called the silent killer, high blood pressure. It can cause stroke. It can cause heart attack without any warning in advance. If an ad gets you, one of the 18 million Americans that don't know they have high blood pressure, if it can get you into a doctor where in all likelihood you're going to get a blood pressure test with a blood pressure cuff on your arm, then your life may have been prolonged significantly just by an ad convincing you to go say, hey, I've been feeling the way that ad described. I think I've got those symptoms. I ought to go see a doctor.
Jim Davidson with us today talking about pharmaceutical ads on TV. Jim, I want to get back to the First Amendment, which you cited. There's also some other aspects of limitations, exceptions to First Amendment protections, which I'm sure you're aware of, including First Amendment rights, which can be limited if commercials take undue advantage, if the commercial sponsor takes undue advantage of its audience. I can give you plenty of examples in terms of court cases, 1976, Virginia Pharmacy Board versus Virginia Citizens Consumer Council. I don't want to make this a total issue over First Amendment, but what I do want to make the point is that First Amendment protection is not unlimited, is it?
It is not for advertising. It is for what you do if you're in a news program, but not for advertising.
Well, wouldn't you say, though, that commercial speech still has far less First Amendment protection than other speech?
No, I would not say that at all. In fact, I'd totally disagree with that. Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, just 4 years ago in a famous case called Thompson versus Western State, said, it doesn't matter if the Food and Drug Administration, which in that case wanted to terminate advertising about compounded drugs, she said it does not matter if the government fears that the ad will persuade a consumer to go to their doctor and ask for a drug that is not right for them. That still does not justify the government's intervention with that advertising.
Who is talking to your opponents and what are they claiming?
When you say talking to them.
Yeah, who is talking to them? Obviously, there's a large and growing opposition, at least perceptively, to the amount of television ads that claim certain things, pharmaceutical ads, on TV. My question is, from your vantage point, who is talking to your opponents and what are they claiming?
Well, I think that there is a fear that advertising increases the price of prescription drugs, which according to the Government Accountability Office is not the case. But there is a fear that if money is being spent on advertising, it can increase the price. Now, it clearly will increase the request for whatever product is being advertised. That's what advertising is all about. The difference here and the fundamental difference is that this is not like going into a retail store and buying something that you see advertised. You and I can't do that. If we feel a little down in the dumps, we can't go into a drugstore and ask for an antidepressant. Rather, we have to go see a doctor, and the doctor has to use his or her professional judgment to determine if we have the condition that we're concerned about and if the drug is the appropriate treatment for that, and then the doctor may write a prescription. So there's a number of safeguards between us and them. But I think there's...
Well, you're basically saying to the consumer in these ads on television, you have to talk to your doctor. That's a given. You have to talk to your doctor. And many doctors, pardon?
That's required by law.
Well, it's required by law that you have to talk to your doctor. On the other hand, some doctors, frankly, have been very friendly toward pharmaceutical companies over the years. It kind of sets up kind of an interesting potential conflict, doesn't it?
I don't know of a doctor in the country who would violate their Hippocratic Oath because they received a pencil from a pharmaceutical company. Or even a meal or anything else. Doctors are first and foremost loyal to their patients. The president, incoming president of the American Medical Association, just testified last week before the House Energy and Commerce Committee. And she was adamant in defending physicians and their judgment in this relationship. But you ask who's talking to the other side on this. I think there are two concerns. One, there's a legitimate concern about whether or not we are protecting Americans from drugs that may have a safety issue or an unexpected side effect issue. And that's a function of proper testing and trials, and also proper post-marketing monitoring of patient reaction to particular drugs.
Is it a function
that was enhanced dramatically?
Is it a function of the commercial, though, too, Jim? Amendments. Is it a function of the commercial, too, to make that loud and clear?
Is it a function? Absolutely.
It is.
And the in terms of the standard that you use to judge whether or not an ad is protected or not is whether it's truthful and not misleading. If you had an ad that was just giving you all one side and not giving you any of the potential side effects, you could argue that that ad was misleading the consumer.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical and tell me if you think it's misleading. I've been in this business all of my life as a reporter, talk show host, investigative reporter, and somebody who's made a reasonable amount of money doing commercials. So I'm aware of doing commercials and the effect they have. What do you think is the effect of a 60-second spot, for example, on somebody in which the benefits of a drug, regardless of the condition here, are mentioned, and in which advertising successfully is used to show a problem in the beginning and then happiness at the end, and the side effects and potential complications are limited to a lot of fast-talking commercials, as I used to do for automobile dealers?
Those ads don't exist anymore.
They don't exist anymore.
They don't exist anymore. And one of the reasons why is very simple. The pharmaceutical industry, after having been criticized for having companies advertise products and then either scroll quickly through a list of side effects or having them read quickly, took that challenge and that obligation seriously, issued a whole new set of guidelines to govern what advertising should and should not do. The guidelines followed both recommendations of the American Medical Association and recommendations of the Food and Drug Administration. And one of the things that it makes very clear is that you have to properly treat any adverse events, as they're called in the trade, adverse events that may result from that prescription. So if you look at even one of the ads that's been controversial recently, the ad using Dr. Jarvik on behalf of Lipitor, and watch both the sound...
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with
very,
the... But Jim, wait a minute. But that has nothing to do... The Jarvik ad has nothing to do with talking very quickly and telling people that you can get so much... That has more to do with Jarvik's qualifications to allegedly issue medical advice, since he is not a doctor. Let me tell you what I'm specifically talking about.
Mm-hmm.
2007, Journal of Health Communication. Three university studies looking at commercials. Average 60-second commercial devoted less than 0.08, that's 8 seconds, to side effects. Average 30-second commercial devoted less than 4.4 seconds to side effects. That's what I'm talking about. What I'm wondering about
those
is...
Those don't exist anymore. I'm just telling you.
They don't exist anymore.
Because you'll see closer to almost half of the time devoted to a discussion of side effects and proper use of the prescription drug.
In a 60-second commercial, saying that at least 30 seconds will be devoted to side effects?
Anywhere between 20 and 30 seconds will be devoted to side effects or proper use of the drug, whether it's the dosages or recommended conditions to use it in, yes.
Jim Davidson's our guest, director of the Advertising Coalition, which lobbies for media and drug companies in Washington, D.C. If you have any questions or comments, 1-888-463-6748. Would you say that there's any truth, and perhaps not now, but there was any truth to the suggestion by some that these commercials over the years have created some, frankly, some diseases, some illnesses that were not there before.
Give me an example.
Irritable bowel syndrome.
Well, I don't know if you know anyone that suffers from colitis, but it is far from a manufactured condition.
I guess what I'm saying is, would you say that advertising and its use, its persistent use, which is part of what advertising is all about, turned irritable bowel syndrome into a creditable, common, and concrete disease requiring drugs?
Well, let me turn it around. There are a lot of conditions, physical conditions, whether it is a urinary control condition, whether it's a condition called erectile dysfunction, and possibly irritable bowel syndrome, in which people are not comfortable talking about these subjects with even their doctor, let alone their families. Mm-hmm. And advertising has helped them discuss the subject in a way that they never felt comfortable with before. Remember, it's one thing to advertise. It's another thing to get someone who is uncomfortable to go talk to their doctor. You and I don't like going to the doctor just to have a conversation. A lot of people don't go to the doctor even when they are legitimately feeling poorly and need medical attention. It's difficult for them to do this.
So you're saying that one of the positive aspects of this type of commercial is to open the way of communication between a patient who in the past was afraid to ask his or her doctor about information or the intricacies of various diseases, that it's really been a positive reinforcement of you can ask your doctor and he or she will give you advice.
I genuinely believe that, Dave.
Okay. I noticed in doing some research on this, and I don't have the answer to this, maybe you do, why the United States is the only industrialized nation in the world to allow drug ads on TV.
Actually,
are we that far?
One other country is New Zealand.
New Zealand, okay. Why is that?
Would ascribe that to the First Amendment. And remember, we've been advertising prescription medications through print publications since 1982. That's mm-hmm. been permitted.
Mm-hmm.
In 1997, the Food and Drug Administration, interestingly enough, under the direction of a series of commissioners who were not all that favorable to advertising on television, and nevertheless, they felt both the First Amendment and the benefit for consumer education would lead to a positive overall effect of allowing advertising on radio and on television. And at that time, a rule was issued by the Food and Drug Administration that allowed companies to put these advertising for prescription medications on television. It's just been 10 years, and so anybody learns a lot in the first 10 years of doing something, and they learn how to do things better, more clearly, more in confirmation with whatever the rules are for advertising. But I think we are learning that they can be a very powerful tool for helping people understand their own health care and to take charge of their own health care. One of the things that's fascinating about it is the number of people, we estimate over 60 million people a year see these ads and then go seek the information from other sources, whether it's the internet or magazines or from their physician. So getting people to be more inquisitive about their health, I think, is a really good thing.
Does it bother the pharmaceutical companies at all? I know it certainly doesn't bother the ad agencies or the TV networks because I worked for both. But does it bother the pharmaceutical companies at all that success in these commercials is implied by assumption? And I kind of relate it to like a beer spot. Most of the spots that are aimed at guys always have good-looking babes in them. So it's like beer and babes. The assumption is that if you drink this kind of beer, all the good-looking babes will be around you. We know that that's silly, but advertising is very powerful. Is there this kind of success implied by assertion in these drug spots?
Well, do you think it would be helpful to tell someone in an advertisement, if you feel this way, you might try this particular medication, but it's probably not going to work?
Well, I don't mean it. I mean, I think there's a wide span between what you're suggesting and the example that I gave. It's kind of like when you watch a spot today, you see obviously the woe is me in the beginning. Then you see the pitch, and then you see the woe is me turned into, hey, ain't life great? All done in either 30 or 60. So what I'm wondering is, as I said, as somebody who's been involved in this all my life, isn't success implied by the assumption that things are bad in the beginning, but if you do this, everything will be okay?
Well, I guess I'm not troubled by that at all. If, in fact, what results is the person who sees the ad, if they have that healthcare condition, gets off their couch and goes to talk to a healthcare professional.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I come back to my example of the number of people who are undiagnosed for high blood pressure. It applies to diabetes. There are 6 million Americans that have diabetes and don't know it. And yet, as you know, diabetes can be a tremendous precursor to heart disease and stroke. So I think our goal is, how do we motivate people positively? And certainly the government is not going to pay for ads to tell you to go see your doctor. How in a free society with the First Amendment can we encourage people to seek out help when it could be very important to their future health?
I'm not suggesting that these commercials are not a good idea, but I want to get back to something in a moment. Our phone number here on the Dave Baum Show is 1-888-463-6748. It's toll free. Let's say hello to Mike. Mike, you're on the Dave Baum Show with Jim Davidson. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
A question for Mr. Davidson. Wondering if you're in favor of other ads for items such as cigarettes, hard liquor, maybe even guns, as it pertains to the First Amendment?
Well, again, it's not what I favor. It's what does the First Amendment say, Mike? The First Amendment says if a product is legal and if what you say about the product is truthful and not misleading, it is legal to advertise that product. Let's take cigarettes, though. One of the things that happened, there's a perception, I think, that the federal government came in and terminated advertising of cigarettes on television. What actually happened is that there was an agreement back in the late 1960s, early 1970s, between companies that produce cigarettes to withdraw their advertising from radio and television. And this was sanctioned by subsequent federal action, but it was not caused by it. And what happened?
Pharmaceuticals wouldn't do the same thing now, would they?
Pardon me?
Pharmaceuticals and television wouldn't, and even radio wouldn't do the same thing now, would they? I'm just wondering. You're absolutely right that this was outside, initially, this was outside of the federal realm, Mike, in which voluntarily cigarette industry and the media decided to pull cigarette ads. I guess what I'm saying is pharmaceutical industry wouldn't do the same thing today, would they? Would they find any reason to do it today?
I can't see a reason that they would do that, since the ultimate goal of pharmaceuticals is to help make people healthier.
Mike? Okay, Mike dropped off the phone. Thank you, Mike, for your call. Jim, the side effects in these commercials, we talked about it, we touched on it briefly earlier. Some would say, and I would say, that the side effects for many of these commercials are trivialized. Let me give you an example. And I could run down a ton of them. I'll use the drug Boniva. And we see a former Hollywood actress and television actress in these commercials for Boniva, which deals with osteoporosis. And I'm quoting here. Boniva is a prescription medicine for the management of postmenopausal osteoporosis. You should not take Boniva if you have low blood calcium, cannot sit or stand for at least 60 minutes, have severe kidney disease, or are allergic to Boniva. Stop taking Boniva and tell your healthcare provider if you experience difficult or painful swallowing, chest pain, or severe or continuing heartburn, as these may be signs of serious upper digestive problems. Follow the once-monthly Boniva dosing instructions carefully to lower the chance of these events occurring. Side effects are generally mild or moderate and may include diarrhea, pain in the arms or legs, or upset stomach. If you develop severe bone, joint, and or muscle pain, contact your healthcare provider. Your healthcare provider may also recommend a calcium and vitamin D supplement. Would you say that, if you use that as an example, and I have others, that sometimes the side effects are trivialized?
Well, let me turn the question around just a shade, and because you're in broadcast and you've also done advertising.
Well, I can give you Celebrex. I mean, Celebrex can kill you.
Can I give you my example?
Yeah.
There are many occasions, and polls have shown this, public opinion surveys have shown this, where if you provide too much information about one subject, you turn people off. So a debate that goes on between the people who are advertising experts at the Food and Drug Administration, at advertising agencies, and at pharmaceutical companies is how much is too much information? Do you provide them with every possible side effect or only the major side effects? And even with the major side effects, how do you do it in a way that you think that your audience is going to comprehend it and factor it into their decision?
So basically, in lingo that you and I understand, the happy medium is a teaser. You tease them with a certain amount of info, and then after you tease them, you hope they'll go to their doctor and pick up the rest, right?
Exactly.
It's a teaser.
It is a teaser, but let me give you the flip side that's really a problem. There is polling now that's showing that people who've already been to their doctor, independent of any ad, and have been put on a medication by a doctor, then see an ad listing all the side effects, mm-hmm. often stop taking the medication because they're afraid of the side effects that they see in the advertisement. And that clearly is not a good result.
Let me ask in conclusion to this portion of our conversation, Jim, the politics of the issue aside, the FDA has claimed for years that, frankly, it didn't have the manpower to conduct due diligence on a lot of the ads, a lot of the background information, et cetera. I think something like 30-35% of drug ads that appear on TV are viewed by FDA staff. That being said, is there some concern in the advertising as well as the pharmaceutical industry about what happens in November, either McCain or Obama, and if there are any changes on the horizon if a Democrat gets elected or if another Republican gets elected?
I don't really think so, because this is not broken down on partisan ground. There have been critics of advertising that have come from both parties. But I'll tell you, one of the things that Congress did last year that I think is a major improvement, and everybody in Congress and in the industry believes that, they finally increased substantially, and by that 500 times, the amount of money that FDA gets for advertising review. Up until last year, it was a little bit over $1 million, and last year, Congress gave them $6.25 million mm-hmm. To hire staff so that they could do an adequate job. And one of the reasons for that is the law that was passed by Congress last year that was an FDA reform law gave the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration the authority to require all advertising to be pre-submitted 45 days in advance of its appearance for review by FDA. Again, making that partnership working together a lot stronger, but also giving FDA the resources to do the job.
Well, they need staff. As I understand it, and I'm certainly not there, but at least from what I read, they need staff. And there was also a pharmaceutical financial pullout from that possibility, wasn't there?
Well, this gets complicated, but let me explain very quickly.
I mean, they were in and then they were out?
They agreed in advance to put up the money, much as they do for under the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, put up the money for the advertising review. That was not funded by a major member of Congress who objected to having private sector contributions for the ad review.
Thought there'd be a conflict.
That's right. So instead, the Appropriations Committee in the House of Representatives appropriated enough money to hire tons of staff to do this advertising review, mm-hmm. but it's not being placed in the form of an assessment on the pharmaceutical companies. It's the federal government giving FDA the resources and the staff they need to do the job, but not having to assess the private sector for it.
Jim, thank you very much for your time today. Jim Davidson, director of the Advertising Coalition, which lobbies for media and drug companies in Washington. We appreciate your side of the story. Thank you very much.
Dave, thank you for having me.
You bet. Coming back on the Baum Show after a pause will be Dr. Jerome Hoffman, professor of medicine and emergency medicine at the UCLA School of Medicine in Los Angeles. And our phone number doesn't change, 1-888-463-6748. If you're just joining us, the pros and cons of, some would say, well, I'll say it, excessive drug advertising on network newscasts. And I'm sure that would include network programming, too, but I'm just talking about what I've seen and what caused me to want to do this hour on whether or not you think it's excessive and get both sides of the story. It's endless. It's just endless. ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, it's endless. You watch a network newscast, and let me tell you, everything from diarrhea to restless leg syndrome to irritated bowels to God knows what else. We're lucky we're alive.